This is Hearts of Oak podcast. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and open and free discussion on any topic are bedrock to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. Join us. Let's keep the conversation going.
Carl, tonight, looking at the online safety bill, the silencing of dissent and debate under the guise of public safety. And looking at, can the government's new laws make the internet safer while also defending free speech? And if I just set it out with our viewers or listeners. So in May 2021, the government published the draft online safety bill, which aims to safeguard young people and clamp down on online abuse while protecting freedom of speech. Is currently undergoing pre-legislative scrutiny by a joint committee, which will report its recommendations by 10th of December. And let me just bring up the bill, because sometimes these bills are quite complex. And I'll just scroll through the bill just so you get an idea of the bill. And there we go. First 20 pages, 30 pages. 40 pages, 50 pages, 60, 70, 80, 90, 100, 110, 120, 130, 100, 145 pages. Carl, you'd kind of think they're trying to make this complicated, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the, was it 2,000 pages that the Biden bailout bill was, the bipartisan thing. I am genuinely annoyed at the way that this country legislates since Tony Blair, to be honest. Apparently Tony Blair, in his tenure, had legislated more than all English legislation since 1066. So basically you could stack them both up in equal amounts of piles. And I do wonder about this sort of rush to legislation. It's just, I don't know. Who can keep up with it, right? You're going to end up falling foul of laws you didn't even know existed, because how could you know? It's totally unreasonable to think that people can keep up with the amount of things that have been legislated. Now, I actually haven't been following this online harms bill, but as I understand it, it applies to the companies rather than the individuals using the system. So I guess that's a small mercy. I don't see it doing much to protect free speech if it's going to abolish online anonymity. I'm personally not anonymous online, but then that's because I'm a talking head. Why would I be? But I appreciate that there are lots of people who would like to voice their opinions, and we are in an era of cancel culture, so it would be nice to be able to do that without losing your job, losing your house, without your neighbors calling you names because Sky or the BBC wrote a hit piece on you, etc., etc., etc. I'm surprised this comes from the Conservatives, to be honest. This sounds like a Labour initiative, but then why would I be surprised, since the Conservatives are basically the Labour Party in blue?
I think the last time you were on, Carl, I felt you had to defend the Conservative Party. So,
yeah, I know. God, don't even get me started. I genuinely despise the rails that this country has been put on since Tony Blair got in office. And I mean, everything that happens is the child of Tony Blair at this point. Nothing. He's like some sort of evil patriarch whose brood is ruling over this country, and we are on just a one-way street to God only knows. I really dread to think where we're going to end up, to be honest. But I think this is a particularly cynical use of Sir David Armistice's murder, frankly. Nothing to do with online anonymity. The Conservatives have not mentioned the ideology that killed one of their beloved colleagues. And they all acted like they just didn't give a shit. They just didn't care. And it's like, wow. You know, if that was someone I worked with and someone that I was good friends with and someone murdered them, I would have a few things to say about the murderer. But notice that completely dropped out of the news cycle. None of the MPs are talking about it. None of the politicians want to discuss it. Instead, immediately, oh, well, we need to get rid of online anonymity, which had nothing to do with any of this. So this is cynical, like I said.
Can I bring up the committee that are looking at it? It's always for a bill. You have the different report stages, and it's voted on, and then you've got the committee stage, and you've got a bunch of 12 supposedly improve it, make it better, and it generally does work generally, but you get random people. So this is the group that supposedly are going to protect our freedoms, and none of them jump out. Actually, it's quite a, I was going to say low class, my apologies to these wonderful MPs and peers, but it is, no one stands out as really understanding this. I mean, David Davis, someone like that, really has spoken out about freedoms. And
can we scroll down a little bit, please? Can we scroll down a little bit? Can we scroll down a little bit so I can see yours? Right, okay. So Conservative, Liberal Democrat, SNP and Labour.
Yeah.
Well, I feel safer already. I'm heartened to know that our liberties are safe.
They have huge power, committee, because generally a lot of their recommendations, generally quite a number of them are carried, not all of them, but they will make changes to this 145 pages. I don't know how many extra pages they'll add to it, but it's interesting, our procedure or process, that it puts the power and then it goes to the full house, whether or not the house is sitting. It's been a hybrid house for quite a while, but these individuals will report back after the 10th of December, and we'll get to see what they're proposing as changes to this before it goes to a vote of the house again.
Notice that Victoria in the chat asks, who asked for this? And that's a great question, isn't it? Because who does this protect, really? Well, who it protects are online MPs. That's who it protects.
Yeah.
People on Twitter, specifically, because you don't get the same sort of problems with the, like, online harassment that you do on Facebook or Instagram or anything like that. It's all about Twitter, because everyone can see each other all the time on Twitter, and everyone is exposed to each other on Twitter constantly in this maelstrom of back and forth. And that's the complaint. And to be honest with you, the Labour Party should have probably seen this coming, given how we know that there have been studies that show it is male conservative MPs who get the most abuse on British Twitter. And they get the most abuse, guess who? That's right, Corbyn supporters, Labourites. They are unbelievable. And so this seems to be a way for the Conservatives to essentially unmask those Labour supporters and criminalise them. Which, I mean, don't get me wrong, sounds like a great plan, but I'm not down on the abolishing online anonymity. Because, I mean, the thing is, how does this work? And like I said, I've not read the bill, because it's 145 pages. I've not read the bill. So how does this work? Do we have to now submit identification, social media platforms? That's a bit of a concern, considering how often social media platforms get hacked and the information gets dumped. I mean, this happens quite often. So your ID will just be floating around the internet for anyone to use and sign you up to things and whatnot. And what happens if the platforms just say, well, we're not going to do that, we're in America, First Amendment rights, don't care about your opinion? Are the UK government then going to block these platforms? Because, I mean, if so, come on, Twitter, don't ask for ID, get yourselves blocked, you know. And then what? You know, do we have little, like, Chinese-style firewall with little British government versions of social media that the state gets to control and police to make sure that nobody on there is saying mean words? Thanks again, Tony Blair. Is this what we are doing? I can't stand it.
There was an article back in May, wasn't it? June, 23rd of June, some month after, and this is in the BBC, online safety bill catastrophic for free speech. And this was a group of individuals led by David Davis and talking of how disruptive and destructive this would be for free speech. But interesting, it goes and it talks about the balance between safety and free speech as if they are opposing ideas. And I think you can look at safety for individuals in society but also have free speech. But I think the media often put them as opposing ideas.
Well, I mean, from their paradigm, they are opposing ideas. We don't have free speech in this country, so sitting here complaining, well, we need free speech. I mean, good luck. You'd have to repeal a bunch of laws to get free speech. You'd have to change the general climate of political discourse in this country to have free speech. I mean, there was an example the other day where a man had been given a parking ticket in Wales, a Welsh man had been given a parking ticket in Wales, and he called the parking attendant a stupid Welsh, it wasn't slag, but it was, you know, it was an insult against a woman. And instead of being done for being sexist, he was done for racially aggravated hate crime. A Welsh man called a Welsh woman Welsh, and that was a hate crime. Right. Okay. Fine. I mean, the idea that we have free speech in the country is just an ancient pipe dream. And I don't think it's coming back. I think it's just going to get worse. So be prepared to be told what you can't say.
I mean, you mentioned about this happened under conservatives. I mean, there are good conservatives. I was having a...
They just don't control the party, unfortunately.
No, I know. I had a good interview on Thursday. I got an interview with Alan Miller from Together Declaration. And one of their main areas in the Together Declaration is also this safety online bill, because they realize the dangers. But there are a number of good MPs, and I'm wondering how they do not get the word out that, one, this is possibly bad for your vote, and two, it's not going to fix a problem. I mean, why push a solution if it's actually not going to do anything at all to the problem you're trying to address?
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? It's not going to be bad for their votes because there's simply nowhere else for people to go, apparently. They for some reason will not vote for, and when they're like, right, that's it, I'm not voting Conservative anymore. Oh, great. Who are you going to vote for? The Brexit Party or Reform or Reclaim? No, I'm voting for Labour. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Right. So for some reason, the public in Britain, just they're the architects of their own misery on this.
Yeah.
And they were sat there going, but I voted Conservative or I voted Labour my whole life. And now I'm being told off because I tweeted something or I posted something on Facebook. So, yeah, well, this is what you voted for. Unfortunately, this is just the way that British politics is, and it's so calcified at this point. It's unthinkable for most British people to even consider voting for a different party, and they don't know who their MPs are, by and large. They have no idea. Like, 650 MPs, and they don't know. They couldn't name more than five or six. You know, they have no idea what's going on, and they don't care to. They just vote red or blue, and it's like, okay, well, then we're going to be trapped in this perpetual cycle forever. I mean, like the Conservatives, actually, right? You were saying there are good Conservatives. I question this. I think there are Conservatives who are fucking cowards, and there are Conservatives who are downright evil, right? Mm. And don't get me wrong, all of Labour are downright evil. So it's a start that they have some fucking cowards in their ranks rather than just being a series of villains. But like Steve Baker is the best example. The principled libertarian Baker was at the Conservative Party conference, and he was asked, well, what's with these lockdowns? What's with the spending? And he was like, well, we're a socialist party now. Right. You're not a very principled libertarian if you're prepared to stay in a socialist party.
Yeah.
You, the libertarian, should have been like, look, I can't sign off on all this. I'm going to have to leave this party and be an independent MP. That's it. I have to. And if there are a bunch of actual conservative MPs, why don't they secede? Why don't they do something? Mm. Like, even if it was like 20 or 30 of them, that would make them bigger than like, what, the SNP and the Lib Dems. That would make them like a threat to the Labour Party, frankly, the way things are going with Labour. And so like, why not? What have you got to lose? You know, be like, you know, I don't know what you'd call themselves, the actual Conservatives, whatever you want to call themselves. You know, but like actually start something. And if a good chunk of them would break away on principle, A, everyone would agree. I mean, good God. Finally, a bunch of Conservatives who are actually Conservative who are going to stand up for what is right rather than Boris Johnson's socialism. And it would be a lodestone, a point that other people could gravitate towards, where it's part of the establishment. So it's not like, oh God, these are fringe people we don't know anything about. Maybe they're going to blow up the world. No, that's not. You don't have to worry about that. You've got the sort of tried and tested like history, the ancestry there of these people, and yet they would be something that is not the controlled mainstream Conservative Party. But none of this is going to happen. None of this is going to happen because, like I said, the Conservatives who claim to be Conservative in the Conservative Party are actually the fucking cowards, and the rest are just mean and evil.
I mean, the time I have heard Steve Baker is a perfect example of MPs saying they're voting for more lockdowns with a heavy heart. I mean, screw you and your heavy heart.
Oh, vote the right way. I remember Steve Baker in the Parliament when he was saying, I'm terribly worried about giving the government these powers. It's like, then don't. Then don't do it. What are you talking about? Well, you know, I mean, we are setting up the government to actually be like, you know, totalitarian fascist government that can just take over all of society at once. But I, the principled libertarian, I'm going to vote for this provisionally. I'm a bit scared about this. Then don't. You liar, or you're a coward, obviously. And I personally put it down to cowardice. You know, I'm sure, like, Steve Baker tweeted out a series of libertarian books, like, you know, The Constitution of Liberty by Hayek and, you know, Mises and stuff like this. It's like, well, this is what we believe. It's like, no, it's fucking not. You add the Communist Manifesto to that, Steve, because that's what you really believe. You know, this country is being run by Jeremy Corbyn in spirit, and you know it. You call it a socialist government. Do something. Do something. Have the courage of your convictions, man. Sorry, this really annoys me. I've been thinking about this a lot, and it really annoys me.
I would love to see the DUP running all over England and Scotland and Wales.
God, the DUP seem unfathomably based compared to our Conservatives, don't they? And I don't know anything about them, but every time I see the press reporting on anything they've done, they're always like, oh my God, it's like, okay, they must be doing something right. You know, fantastic. You know, the Conservatives have to remember, if the press aren't screeching about you, then you are not a Conservative.
Exactly. This bill, looking at it, this, I do politics all night, but we could look at this bill. So it's published. Sorry, yeah. It imposes a duty of care on social media companies. Not sure exactly what that means and how that's defined, but and some other platforms that allow users to share and post material to remove harmful content.
How are they defining harmful content?
Exactly. Many people feel harmed by all those hurty words. So I guess anyone can be harmed by content if they disagree with it.
I don't see how this is anyone's problem other than the person using the platform.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't. Let me see if I can find anything. Because I've no idea. Online safety bill, right? It's a Sky News thing. So what's it going to have? A census charter has been called. Well, it sounds like it, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah.
So what does it do? Obligation on companies to keep users safe, defined in broad terms. Material that is already illegal under English law. Okay, well then why bother?
Exactly.
Material that is considered legal but harmful. So it won't be legal for the companies to host it, even though it would be legal for you to post it. That's such a strange standard. Such a strange standard.
Because Spiffy, it says, such as abuse that doesn't reach the threshold of criminality, such as misinformation, is another one. So who decides what information is correct?
Well, that's carte blanche, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's them saying, well, listen, if we want something taken down, we've given ourselves the legal authority for you to take it down. And otherwise, you get penalized to whatever the extent that criminal penalties are for violating this law.
Exactly. And it also doesn't seem, it seems to attack individuals, but not, although it is fining companies, I've also read quite a number of places. David Davis has certainly said that news published on a website like the Telegraph would be subject to journalistic exemptions. So once again, they're passing a law which doesn't affect the mainstream media. It only affects others.
That's very interesting, isn't it? Rules for thee, but not for me. But it was David Davis who calls it a census charter. Okay, David, you're part of the Conservative Party that is introducing a census charter. What are you going to do? Are you just going to be like, yep, I sign off on that tacitly by merely flapping my meat face sack and then doing nothing? Take some action. Resign. If you are a person of conscience anyway. But of course, you've got a pension, you've got a position, you don't want to resign because blah, 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 and nothing will happen. I mean, none of this. This is all so ill-defined. This is all so unbelievably vague. And if there's one thing you don't want to do is have vague laws. Laws are supposed to be specific in order that you can know when you've broken them and to prevent the amount of abuse from the people in power as we're seeing.
Yeah.
Davis criticized the bill as a good example of the best intentions leading to the worst of outcomes. Then do something. Then do something. Objects, resign, you know, block it, do whatever you can do. I don't know what his options are, but surely, like, just sit there going sky and just being like, well, I don't like it. It's got to be more than that.
another part of this is that it seems to fall under Ofcom, and Ofcom, they specifically will have the power to block access to websites, to fine these companies, I think 10% of their global annual turnover. I can't imagine them going after Facebook and deciding, we're going to fine you 10%. How is that going to fly at all? How is that going to work?
They'll do exactly what they did in Australia and just pull out of that country.
Yeah.
And the Google has done the same in Spain and in parts of the European Union when the European Union has tried to wring money out of them. They're very, very quick just to drop an entire country, to be honest. Mm. And at the end of the day, these companies, even if they had to drop every other country on Earth, they'd still be secure in the United States because of First Amendment protections. Yeah. So you're never going to – all you'd be able to do is drive that company out of your country. And do you want that? Is that good? I mean, maybe that's good. Maybe that's useful. I don't know. I don't think it's wise, but what do I know? You know, what do I know?
What do you think about Nadine Dorries? Because she's come in and she's someone who's been very vocal, and yet she seems to be calling for this to be even tightened. When I read a few days ago, and she's someone who I always saw as a very good voice in the Conservative Party, very, and yet she seems to want more restrictions.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to reserve judgment on that because I haven't seen what she's actually said about it. Mm. So I don't want to judge without having the knowledge of exactly what she said. But I mean, Callum's a very big fan of hers, or at least he was, I suppose. I did not know that she was cranking the ratchet on this. But again, I guess the Conservatives just looking at this saying, well, look, we're going to be in power forever because the Labour Party are totally unelectable. And the British public just refused to vote for anyone else. And so now what? You know, we'll just do what we like. We'll have this entire... And who knows where this goes? I'm genuinely concerned about where this all goes. And let's say they do put all of this into place. What happens when the Labour Party get into power in like 5 or 10 years' time? What then? You know, 15 years' time maybe. Then you've given them all of these precedents such as lockdowns. You've given them the tools to enact mass censorship. And you've shown them that the will is an acceptable political presence. You're allowed to do this. People accept that you can do this. People aren't going to object. There aren't going to be protests outside of Parliament. Nobody's going to be resigning from the party. It's not going to destroy British politics. Your party will go totally unscathed in the face of the censor's charter. So what difference does it make? You know, I mean, honestly, I'm getting very despondent.
Sorry.
Honestly, I really am. It's...
Here, I want to burst Callum's bubble even more. Oh, so God. This was on the 4th of November, and supposedly the media bosses have 2 years to fix all the bad things they're told they're doing wrong, to change their algorithms, or else they will face prosecution, includes jail time. And she said, no, 3 months it should be it, and then they can be put in jail for anything wrong. And it's weird because she seems to be calling for swifter punishment for allowing freedom of speech, and that I need to delve deeper, but it's someone who has opposed the monopolization of the BBC and the attacks of the BBC on during Brexit, everything else, and yet she seems to be called. But again, that's the Conservative Party in general, I guess. She is a good egg, for want of a better word, and yet is going along with the policies.
I mean, I hate to sound deeply cynical, but it seems like this is a consequence of Twitter. There's a statement from Dominic Raab in this Sky article where he's saying, well, online hate against MPs is out of control. Thanks, Labour Party. You're the ones screeching that they're white supremacists and Nazis and that they deserve everything they get, blah, blah, blah. Like, you're the ones who have made the rod for your own back here now. And then you're going to cry. Oh, this is tyranny. This is okay. Yeah. Well, you'd have done the same in their position, and they're just following your playbook. So I honestly don't know. I'm deeply disillusioned, and I agree with Peter Hitchens. The Conservative Party must be destroyed.
Yeah. But today is the day where if the Labour Party were in power, David Lammy would be foreign secretary. that's the reshuffle.
Yep, that's a good point. God, I just don't know why the people of this country do this to themselves. We don't have to vote for these parties. You know, we joined a party that wasn't one of these parties, you know.
Yeah.
We did our part, and I'm sure everyone in the chat here did their parts as well. But for some reason, the great mass of people are just like, no, I'm happy to be a sheep. If the Conservative Party and the Labour Party are holding hands and say that we need to censor your online presence, they'll be like, oh, I guess I need to have my online presence censored. You know, I don't have an inalienable right to free speech, I guess. Mm. Because the Conservative Party should be doing the opposite of this. They should be doing the opposite of all of this. It's so insufferable. Sorry, I don't want to sit here whining about it, but there's very little else I can do, really.
I can't. Victoria Willing said pretty as well. Well, they're, same as pretty, all of them.
Oh, she came out strong. Oh, we've got to stop this online anonymity. I'm being hassled on Twitter. It's like, then log off of Twitter. Why would any politician want to use Twitter? You want to give the public direct access to you and your eyeballs, do you? Do you think that as a politician, there aren't millions of people who effing hate you? Because of course there are. You know, why, I don't know why celebrities would do it, let alone politicians.
No, absolutely. Obviously, Lotus Eaters, and everyone will know Lotus Eaters.
I mean, technically, I think we get an exemption then, don't we?
but Carl, you've been involved in putting messages out on media. And so how do you, because there are already all these restrictions, and we find that out, especially with COVID, but on other issues as well. And the piece you put up on today on heart attack issues, and that's something you can't discuss widely because there may be a whole knock-on effect. But
we literally had to put, for anyone curious, there have been mysterious heart attacks that nobody has any idea why suddenly athletes in the prime of their lives are just dropping on the field, just dead, boom, 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 boom. Literally hundreds of them, right? Mm. And that's not connected to any mandates that are happening in the sporting arenas or anything like this. And so, you know, no one can talk about this on any Silicon Valley platform. So we had to put it on our own website. That's the only way we could do it. It's mad. It's absolutely mad. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Carry on.
No, but I'm asking you because you've realized there are restrictions. We're all finding, but you certainly found it much earlier on. There are restrictions put in place of what you can or cannot say. So I don't understand why they're trying to bring in legislation whenever companies are already curtailing that free speech, which you find out regularly.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? Really makes you wonder. I mean, the hate speech laws and stuff like that were in place before social media became a thing in this country. Yep. So I suppose that you can overlook because that was already there. But I've no idea. And I mean, I'm just saying that I think that money has changed hands behind the scenes. Mm. It does look like Boris Johnson is a tool of the global elite, doesn't it? You know, he has his G8 conferences and goes to Davos and gets head pats from Klaus Schwab and all of the rest. And he does exactly what they ask. And what's really amusing is watching sort of Boris and the little cabal of people around him who are clearly all on the same team. I mean, like, why is Neil Ferguson still in his employ? Yep. Why has he got a communist on the Sage advisory panel? Why would you not, as a conservative, be like, you're gone. Go. What are you doing here? In fact, be right back. I'm making communism illegal. You know, why would I even have, like, Nazism? You're out. You know, that you're going to jail. The Communist Party of Great Britain has been dissolved. Anyone who claims to be a socialist is out. What more do you want? But instead, they act as kind of the sort of managerial, like, governors of the province of Britain for these people, right? And I find myself very disillusioned with it. And it's funny watching it happen as well, because you can see this is a kind of uniform set of ideas. They're like, right, we're going to impose this on every country around the globe. But in England, there's a particular tradition that is not very widely shared amongst the rest of the world, which is the government doesn't get to tell me what the fuck I do on a day-to-day basis. Yep. And you could see this with Chris Whitty going, well, look, I'm really worried that people won't accept more lockdowns. Good. Fucking good. I hope you lose sleep over it. You know, I'm not going to accept another lockdown. I don't own a mask at this point. You know, like, I don't plan on following mask mandates. And if anyone asks me, like, I'm exempt because I say so, you know, I'm not doing it. You do not get to do this to me. This is, and I hate to say it, but this is England. This is wrong to do in England. There is a genuine traditional significance to this. And the Conservative Party seem totally disconnected from this inheritance. Mm. Like, this is, we're talking about like the ancient liberties of the English here. You know, as an Englishman, you inherit these from time immemorial. And you know what's really interesting as well? I've been reading and researching a lot on this recently to define what the difference between the French Revolution and the English Revolutions are. Why did they end up going such different directions? Because the English Revolutions, like the Glorious Revolution and the American Revolution, didn't just end in paranoid bloodbaths. And it's like, right, okay, why? And why is it the French Revolution and all the communist and fascist revolutions that follow from it, why do they end in paranoid bloodbaths? And the conclusion I came to is that it's because nothing about the English revolutions is innovative in the slightest. It's really amusing. Burke has a great line on it, which is basically like, the English are stupid, leave us alone, or learn from our example, right? Mm. The French think they're more clever than they are. And so when they invent something called the rights of man, you've got like conservative philosopher Michael Oakeshott, who's just like, there's no such thing as the rights of man. Where are you getting this from? You're pulling it out of the sky. And moreover, if you look at it, what you're describing are the inherited rights of Englishmen. Mm. And so that's what you're trying to claim for all of mankind. But the thing is, all of mankind doesn't claim that inheritance. This is just something you've made up out of thin air. And the lineage of this, these ancient liberties of the English, goes back literally to Tacitus in his writings on Germania, where he remarks, shocked in his way, saying, well, hang on a second, these Germanic tribes, they have kings, but these kings aren't absolute. They don't even have the power to punish people. The punishment is done by the priests, you know, who at the time would have been pagan, you know, druidic types. And they all just sit around getting drunk, and they've got no order and hierarchy at all, basically. And this is what Robert Conquest described as Anglo-Saxons in the woods. And basically, like, when like the English-speaking people just get dumped in a continent, either Britain or Americas or wherever, they just figure it out for themselves. They've got this very like personal view of things, like, well, you know, I'll do this and you do that, and then we'll all just work together and everything will grow slowly up out of nothing. And so all of the English revolutions, if you look at the charters, look at the statements, look at like the Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights, the Petition of Rights, sorry, and then, yeah, the Bill of Rights in 1688, they all say to secure or to restore the ancient customs and liberties of this land. And it's like, so none of them are inventing anything new. It's all presupposed that this has existed going way back to, like, you know, past Alfred the Great, right back into the, you know, the woodlands of Saxony, basically. That we've had these liberties this whole time, and all these revolutions in English law are codifications of what was already in existence that has been eroded. And so the French turn up and go, right, okay, we want that, right, we're going to create this new stuff. It's like, you can't innovate in any of this, and if you do, you end up going off on a very different tangent. But this is the point that I'm trying to get to, is basically this is things that we've always had as far as our tradition is concerned, and nothing that Boris does ever connects to any of it. That's why I'm looking at it like it's some sort of global, like, governor who's plopped down, put a coat of paint on that's a British flag, and then said, oh, I love Britain, chaps, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, but demonstrate it. Yeah. Be British. Connect yourself to the history. And he does nothing. And the thing is, it's not that he doesn't know it either. I think he's well-educated, and I think he does know all of this stuff. And I think that, honestly, he looks kind of scared in many ways. I think he looks nervous, and I think the bluster is a way of softening the blow of the tyrannical and increasingly centralized, globally centralized things that he's getting done. Brexit be damned, it doesn't matter. You know, the sovereignty of this country doesn't actually lie here. It lies with whoever controls this governor. That's my thoughts on it.
Do you think this is a blip in a party like the Conservative Party, who have generally championed freedoms? Or are these freedoms that we're going to have to fight to reclaim?
I don't think they're going to give you your freedoms back. I think that it's only through non-cooperation that they will realize that they don't actually have the control over this country that they think they have. There are, I think, and so here's an interesting thing. I'm feeling very disconnected to the rest of the country, right? can see in my area of Wiltshire that people are generally not complying with mask mandates. No, yeah. I was walking around town today and, you know, you saw a few people with masks, but most people just don't care, which is nice. But I don't think it's going to stay that way. I think the pressure will be ratcheted up until everyone just wears their mask. And I'll probably end up doing it myself. I'll probably just, out of convenience's sake, it's either continually get hassed or get fined, or just put the bloody mask on so you can get about with your day. And I'm probably going to end up bending the knee as well. Who's not going to? You know, it's understandable if someone did. But I'm feeling very disconnected. I don't know what the feeling on this is in Yorkshire or in, you know, Durham or down in Cornwall or, you know, in Kent. I don't know, you know, and I don't. Normally you are able to get these sorts of feelings from the news reporting, right? You're normally able to divine the temperature of the rest of the country based on protests that are happening there, or, you know, this is the man on the street view from there. And you get to hear them in their, you know, in everyone gets their regional accents, and you get to hear what the opinion of that person is. But I'm not getting that from the media now. And it's like, right, okay, that's interesting. So I'm feeling a lot more isolated now, frankly. And so, you know, guys, leave me a comment on the video. Tell me what part of the country you're from, and tell me what the people in your area are thinking. Yep. You know, I want to know, is this, you know, I'm sat here as an Englishman going, right, this is fucking awful, and everything's going down the drain, and we've got to change things, or else we're going to lose the heritage that we have been given. And if you guys feel the same way, let me know, because I'm really worried about it. I'm not hearing people saying this, and I'm like, right, okay, well, then I guess maybe the English have just forgotten everything that they are. You know, maybe we don't have anything worth preserving here. Who knows? You know, maybe this global technocratic order is just inevitable.
Do you think this is just a bigger disconnect? Because obviously COVID has produced one level of disconnect in that the public weren't even allowed in Parliament for 15 months. You couldn't go and lobby and directly engage with your MP for the first time, and I don't know how long, probably since the wartime. It's always been open since then. So that was a restriction. And then after David Amos, whether I've had Neil McRae on saying that was just a false flag, who knows, but actually wanting restrictions on actually that face-to-face contact with your constituents.
But they didn't do that, though, did they? They all said we're going to carry on as normal.
Yeah, yeah.
So if this was a false flag, why wouldn't they have implemented it then? I don't think it was. I don't see why we'd need to speculate that it was. I mean, I've seen no evidence to suggest it was or anything like that. And it seems coherent that it's a terror attack.
Yeah, yeah. But on that disconnect, then where does that end up? Because we have had that constituency system whereby you have a relationship to an MP, and with what's happening with COVID, certainly that is being stretched and removed. And I'm wondering where, and when things like this bill come in again, that dampens conversation, public debate, discourse. And what does that mean for the public or the plebs' relationship with those in power?
It means that especially if this is about making sure that you can't directly talk to MPs or politicians of any kind on Twitter without running the risk of falling afoul of the online safety bill. I very much feel like the culture of this country has become very centralized in London. And this is probably for quite some time this has been happening. Throughout my life, I should probably have been more aware, but at least there was a plurality of representation on the media, right? Now, it wasn't very ideological when I was growing up, outside of and it was quite pluralistic. You know, you got to hear from different areas of the country, you'd hear all these strange accents, say, well, that's interesting. You know, these people in this area think this. But I'm not hearing any of that now. Now it's all London. London, 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 London. And and I was watching TV for the first time in years the other day. Because I sat in the living room with my wife, and she's watching like EastEnders or something. Or whatever it is, I can't remember. Yeah, some soap. But some adverts came on. Every single advert was literally, there were at least two or three black people in every advert. Now, I don't care about that. That's not something I'm normally bothered about at all. You know, I'm not in any way interested in talking about race as a political vector. However, when they're representing every advert, if that's meant to be a representation of the country, about half of the people on these adverts were black. And so you would be fooled into thinking that 50% of this country is black. But black people only make up 3% of this country. And yet they don't make up 3% of the adverts. Now, they obviously make up a much more significant percentage of London, and the BBC have their affirmative action schemes because they want to make this the way that things are. They essentially want to turn this entire country into London. And I'm feeling very disconnected to this kind of culture. I don't like it, and I'm seeing it spread. Swindon has become very multicultural. It's become very enriched of late. And I was just, again, walking through town today, and there are just groups of African men gibbering away in some African language. And they're just standing there. It's like, what are you doing here? Why, you know, if they were second or third generation or something, fine, you know, whatever. But they're not. They're recent arrivals who are living in Swindon. It's like, okay, why? Why are you here? Why is the government allowed this to happen? You know, why is any of this happening? But the Conservatives don't care, because we're just going to end up as literally like Airstrip 1, where it's just some, you know, province 37. And that's what it's going to end up with, I think.
I see lots of different comments about geographical comments and locations.
Oh, good.
So, Kent, we don't care. North London, the showers are a lot more compliant. Paul, I'm from Northumberland, and very few are wearing masks, very few want to. Has Carl visited Bradford?
I actually know more about Bradford than most areas of the country. That's why. I see Victoria in the chat. Mixed race families aren't the average. I come from a mixed race family, and I know that's not the average. You know, I mean, no one, when I was growing up, no one ever made mention of the fact that I come from a mixed race family. Like, you know, my dad looks like he's like very dark Mediterranean, like Sicilian or something. And no one ever mentioned anything to it, because it was just a normal country. And, you know, everyone was just normal about these things. But now it's become noticeable, hasn't it? You know, I mean, literally just watching these adverts, like, this is just weird. You know, I feel like we've been conquered. You know, this is the sort of representation that the conqueror would impose, you know, and like it's just so bizarre. If I went to Nigeria and there was just like wall to wall Brazilians on TV, every advert was like 5 or 6 Brazilians. I'm like, okay, well, how many Brazilians do you have in Nigeria? And, oh, 3%. Then why are they all over the television? You know, why have you got Brazilians all over your TV? And they, you know, they'd have to explain it. We can't explain that, though. You know, I mean, there's probably some sort of hate crime where we try and explain it. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. And it looks like we're an occupied country. And the thing is, I don't blame the migrants at all, because they don't know. They're not, you know, they're just like, oh, you can come and live in Britain. Well, I think I will then. You know, okay, that's our government's fault. You know, that's our government's fault for allowing this to happen. They could just put up a sign saying, well, look, we're not accepting any more immigrants. We're not giving out any more visas. But do you know how many came last year? I know you know, in fact, 700,000 new people last year came to live here. It's like...
And how many have been returned this year?
Was it something like 5?
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm talking legal immigrants. We've had, you know, 25,000 illegal immigrants.
Yeah.
5 have been deported. And you know why, don't you? It's lefty human rights lawyers and total lack of compliance from the institutions. There was an article the other day that told us that, the police, the border force, the Home Office, and a couple of other unelected civil service institutions, I can't remember which ones they are, have basically come to an informal agreement where they're just going like, well, we're just not going to enforce the borders. And the border chief was like, oh, these borders are a pain in the rear, aren't they? Yeah, for the migrants, not for you. That's your job. You're being paid $100,000 a year to stop them coming in. Do something. And of course, the French are sending these as a form of hybrid warfare because they're salty about Brexit. And it's like, okay, great. That's great. So we're under attack. There is a literal invasion going on. I mean, it is literally an invasion. I like a lot of the sort of like, you know, and I dare I say the racists online say, well, this legal mass migration is a form of invasion. It's like, no, it's not. We're allowing this to happen, unfortunately. You know, I'm not in favor of it, but it's not an invasion. However, when you get literally foreigners getting on boats, sailing across against the law, and this is not stopped by our own forces, well, that is actually an invasion at this point. And notice the framing. Notice the framing in it all, right? Oh, we need to stop this illegal immigration. Oh, why is that? Well, the people smugglers. It's terrible, these people smugglers. I'm going to give a fuck. I don't want them coming here because they're breaking the law. That's why. Yep. They're not supposed to be here. And I don't know why they don't just follow the 700,000 people who come here illegally. Like, what's the point? What's the point in risking your neck when you could just get a visa like every other fucker on the face of the earth? You know, why? But hey, you know, What do I know? Like I said,
I would recommend they self-identify as Mexicans and head over to Mexico and get over the border. That's more profitable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's just insufferable, isn't it?
But last thought on where we've been looking at the silencing of dissent and debate.
Sorry, right? I know I'm getting distracted, but it's continual, and it really annoys me.
I mean, well, where does that public debate, where does it go if it's online has been a place where you can engage with different ideas? If that's been curtailed, we've got obviously restrictions on universities and with cancel culture running rampant. Where does that public discourse then happen with so many marketplaces, I guess, being removed?
Well, there are upsides to this stuff, and that is
we've got an upside.
They're very small upsides. They're not permanent, and they're not guaranteed. But the alternative media platforms that are coming about at the moment probably will offer us some sort of escape from this problem, at least temporarily, at least for now. Because the reason that these things are noticeable is that people report them. And it requires a certain kind of person to report you to the government. Now, places like Getter and Gab and BitChute, they are not populated by the kind of people who are going to report you to the police. And so if you want to have a screaming debate with someone on there, then fine. You're not going to be able to have it with a screaming lefty, though, because they control Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, or the mainstream Silicon Valley platforms. That's the big platforms where most people are. But there are options. And I don't want to downplay the scale of the new platforms either, because they're growing very fast. I mean, Gab's actually quite huge at the moment. Getter is quite huge as well. There are people with millions of followers on those platforms. BitChute gets something like 35 million unique users a month, which is not insubstantial. It is, you know, these are actually growing quite large because people are well aware, oh, hang on a second, you know, this can't be gone. And so for the time being, you don't see me on Twitter, do you? You know, and the fact that I don't use Twitter is probably why I haven't been visited by the police, to be honest. I post very regularly in some spicy stuff on Gab and Getter and whatnot, and I don't get visited by the police. I'm a very good boy on the Silicon Valley platforms, obviously. Do exactly what I'm told, stay within the rules because you have to. But on the alternate platforms, I don't think you're going to get noticed on there. I think they're going to kind of fly under the radar because, frankly, the one saving grace out of all of this is that the conservatives are fucking boomers. They do not understand the internet. They do not understand technology. They do not understand that these places exist and are just as real as Twitter and Facebook. If it's not an app on their phone that they already have, they don't see it. So as far as they're concerned, these things are the dark web and don't even exist. And it's like, okay, great. You know, so that is this small silver line. That's the one silver lining that I can find around it. Now, it means you can't have arguments. You can't troll lefties and stuff like that because they're not going to be on there. But at least you'll be able to talk to people who are like-minded and share information that you can't share on mainstream platforms. So there's that. And that's the best I can think of. I'm really sorry to be such a downer about all of this. But it doesn't look good. And I wish I could, like, you know, fool myself into being positive about it, but I'm not very positive, to be honest.
The views you get on Lotus Eaters are impressive, and you have a responsibility with Lotus Eaters in informing the public and giving them news that they're not getting elsewhere. And there aren't many others. I mean, there are other good platforms that do good interviews, but actually for that podcast you do every day, there's a lot packed into it. And how, just as we finish, just tell us about that kind of responsibility, which I guess is on you and you're growing, to actually put a piece of information out and have that free debate and dialogue, which you can't have elsewhere.
Well, the fact that it's our own website means that no one else is moderating it. And so there are restrictions. There are certain things, of course. I mean, obviously, within the bounds of the law, obviously. But even within terms of service of various things that you have to rely on to get the functionality that you want. But thankfully, they're a bit more flexible because we have a legal contract with those providers. And that means that they can't just be like, oh, we'll just remove your account then, because then I can sue them. And this is actually something we had to get a lawyer to prod one of them on recently. Say, well, look, you know, they've paid lots of money for this. If you rescind it like this, then you're gonna have to pay them lots of money. And thankfully, there are lots of alternatives to the sort of back end stuff out on the internet, which is good. And generally, because we're not like a big sort of nexus of different political ideologies. Yep. You know, there aren't loads of leftists, there aren't loads of rightists and whatnot. We are flying under the radar, and so we're not, the eye of Sauron isn't on us. And so we get to talk quite freely on our own podcast, which is really nice. And obviously we often will put up a clip that's just like a minute or 2 minutes long to YouTube and say, well, look, because of YouTube's editorial policies, we can't talk about this segment on YouTube. Yeah. So if you want to watch it, you'll have to go and watch it on our website and then leave it at that. But we do try to keep within the YouTube terms of service, just because, I mean, you want to reach as many people as possible. And that's the platform that everyone uses. And in its credit, as free speech goes, YouTube is one of the most tolerant. It does have a very particular slice, a band of type of topics that you're just not allowed to talk about. And any amount of talking on these topics is very, very dangerous to the health of your channel. But outside of that, it's actually quite flexible. And, you know, you have to, and these are relatively recent innovations when it comes to election integrity and COVID and things like this. Just don't, basically. It's not worth your time. But anything else is pretty easy going on YouTube, thankfully. And that's the way we manage it.
Good. Well, on that, I think we'll finish up. Carl, thank you as always. Always good to chat, and thank you for your input and insight. So thank you for your time tonight.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Not at all. Let me just finish off with our viewers or listeners. Thank you for joining us, and thank you for all your chats down the side. On Thursday, we've got Alan Miller. I did a pre-record with him today. Alan Miller is more or less the public face of Together Declaration, and the title is How Vaccine Passports and More Restrictions Are Destroying Businesses and Society. So tune in on Thursday for Alan Miller. I think Matt O'Connor's with us on Saturday for a news review. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for watching. And if you've enjoyed, Carl, make sure and hit that like button. Always good to mess up with YouTube's algorithms if you're watching on YouTube. And if you
hit the dislike button, but no one will see it.
No one will see it. That's true. I don't know if there are any dislikes anymore. They might have removed that, so you can't even dislike Carl now on YouTube. But if you want to dislike him, you can go to Rumble or BitChute or any of the other channels.
Yeah, dislike me on BitChute, yeah.
So just so thank you so much for watching, and do make sure and sign up to the weekly email. One went out today, so just go to heartsvote.org and click on that connect tab, put in your email, and you'll get the weekly emails. And if you haven't already followed Carl and their podcasts every day, then lotuseaters.com, all there available on the website and on any video platform that you choose or want to watch on. So make sure and catch them tomorrow, Tuesday, for your news updates or after. So on that, thank you to our viewers, and have a good rest of your evening, and look forward to seeing you on Thursday with Alan Miller. So thank you and good night.
If you like what we do, sign up to our mailing list. Donate, share, and subscribe to our many platforms at heartsevoke.org. Thank you for listening.